Couple weeks ago, if you guys remember, you know, you guys have better memory than me, but we went to see the Journey to Bethlehem. I know it's like the first time you were here and I offered, but you were going somewhere else, I think, afterwards. So, but we actually went to see the movie, and it's Christmas season, so I thought it'd be good to talk about what the Bible actually says about the nativity scene, or the nativity story. So the nativity is not a word what's literally found in the Bible. But when we hear nativity, what do we think about? The what? Makes you confused? So have you ever seen those little, and it's usually a stable, and it has Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus. So it's a nativity scene. So what nativity means is that someone is born and that there's facts surrounding that birth. You know, time, place, the situation of what's going on. Now, today, when we hear nativity, we think of Jesus, right? Because he's the greatest one ever been born. So it's just where at least my mind goes to, right? And it being Christmas, you usually typically don't hear about it. Maybe it's a Latin word, maybe over, you know, instead of birth announcements, it'd be nativity. Now in the Bible, Matthew and Luke give detailed accounts of Jesus' birth. It's only found there. Matthew writes his gospel, just so you know, he kind of directs it towards Jews, or the Jewish faith, the Hebrews, where Luke is more general. And Luke, he was a Gentile, and Matthew being a Jew. So we'll pick up in Matthew chapter 1, 18 and 19. Jesse, can you read that? So our female lead in the story is Mary. You know, she's betrothed, meaning that she was promised to, she was engaged, or arranged to be married to Joseph. It was very common, and it still happens, but it's very rare nowadays, but in the olden days, to arrange marriages, meaning that you would say, yeah, you know what, it wouldn't be actually the choice of the couples. You know, the parents would be like, okay, you can, you know, our kids, let's get our kids get married. You know, it was a way for the family to take care of their daughters, especially. Because back in the day, you know, the man provides and, you know, you want a good provider for your daughters. Now, we don't know exactly how she felt about this. It could have been a lot of different ways. You know, typically, I would think that, you know, typically, like I said, it was a common thing, so she'd probably be all right with it. It's just the way things worked back then. And then next, we see that she finds out that she's pregnant. Right? And back in the day, unwed females that, you know, so they're not married, and if they're pregnant, they'd be frowned upon, right? Because they, you know, people would be like, oh, scandalous things. You know, they wouldn't be a good. There would be a good chance that she might even, at that time, be put to death because of this. Because she'd be breaking the law, and people would go out, and they were very strict back then. It's kind of weird is that there was all kinds of things that were done behind the scenes they were okay with, but if it was out in front, they were very strict on. Now, Joseph, it says he was just a man. He was a just man, meaning that He was righteous, and he didn't want Mary to be punished because she was a virgin and she was pregnant. She didn't want her to be punished for this, but he didn't want to marry her because of it too. So he was having that conflict. And I did feel like the movie, you know, took some liberties, but it did a good job trying to portray that. You know, it had the scene where, you know, there was struggle, inner struggles that Joseph had. And he would have had. He would have had these struggles. It's like, what should I do? Now, Luke tells us the same account. Both the two, you know, give more detail here and less detail there. You know, they feel like this is more focused, or this is more important to tell people. And it just gives you that true sense that these people are talking about the same thing, but they're, when you guys both tell stories, when two people tell stories, they're going to tell it a little bit different. So in Luke chapter 1, 26 through 28, Sandro, do you feel like reading that? Betrothed.
A man.
That's all right. No, you're doing good.
A man whose name was Joseph of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary, and having come in, the angel said to her, "Rejoice, highly favored one, the Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women."
So this gives a lot of detail. If you really break it down, gives a lot of detail. It's saying, you know, it confirms what Matthew says, but it gives a lot of detail. In the 6 months, it starts out with. So in the Bible, when you're reading the Bible, it's important to see what you just, the verses, what you've read before to the verses what we're after, to get kind of a context of it. So earlier in the chapter, we find out that Mary's relative, we're not exactly sure, cousin, aunt, her name was Elizabeth, was pregnant. Now, Elizabeth is John the Baptist's mom. And I don't know if you know who John the Baptist is, but he actually baptizes his cousin, as it would be, Jesus. You know, he kind of prepares the way for people to receive Jesus. It's just how it worked out. You know, John, 6 months older than Jesus, he'd be coming a little bit before him. Now, he also tells about Luke, but not really thinking that he's not going to marry her. He doesn't go into that detail, but he talks about Joseph being the house of David, meaning that he's related to David, meaning, and Mary is also related to David, and this just, again, of the genealogy, there's a prophecy about Jesus being the house of David. So this all falls in line, and it talks about the angel Gabriel talking to Mary, being that she was going to be blessed, right? Even though she's virgin, she was pregnant, and it was a very good thing. It wasn't a bad thing. Now, Luke goes on in chapter 1, 29 through 33. It's a few slides. Michelle, can you read that?
But when she saw him, she was troubled at his saying, and considered what manner of greeting this was. Then the angel said to her, "Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom there will be no end."
So again, a lot of detail. Now, First thing is angels. You know, we've all seen the little Cupid angels, little chubby babies with wings and maybe bow and arrows or harps. That is not how they were appeared or how they are. They're very impressive beings. You see every time in the Bible they're mentioned or they go and talk to people, they have to reaffirm, well, don't be afraid. So they're very impressive people. Now, again, we're talking about kind of similar era to what the movie went to the funny side. Angel bumps his head. I don't think he's going to be bumping his head, but they were trying to go for comedic, and you can respect that, right? It's a movie, there's licenses, there's liberties there. Gabriel tells Mary about Jesus being born, right? That he was going to be great. That he's going to be called the Son of the Highest, meaning Son of God, right? And the Lord God. He'll be King of Kings, and he'll rule forever. Everything exactly true. You know, fulfilling so many prophecies. You know, we would have a better chance of finding a lottery ticket while we dig a 6-foot ditch in our backyard than to one person to fulfill all these prophecies. It is really, truly amazing that all that just clicked together. And then we'll be jumping back and forth between Matthew and Luke. Matthew chapter 1, 20 through 25. Slides? I'll get you, Stephen, after this one. Jesse, do you want to read those?
But while he thought about these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take to you Mary, your wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit, and she will bring forth a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. So all this was done that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet, saying, Behold, the virgin shall be with child, and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which is translated God with us. Then Joseph, being aroused from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord commanded him, and took to him his wife, and did not know her till she had brought forth her firstborn son, and he called his name Jesus.
All right, so the angel, just like he visited Mary, visited Joseph. You know, this goes hand in hand. You know, Luke was saying, right? And he was talking about how Jesus was going to be born and Mary was conceived and it was supernatural. Don't be afraid of that. You know, it goes into how rain will last forever. This whole thing, right? And it's all tied together. Matthew chapter 2, 1 through 2. Stephen, can you read that?
After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judah, in the days of Herod, the king, behold, wise men from the east come to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east.
All right, so this is where it gets into a lot. Luke doesn't mention the wise men, but Matthew feels he needs to mention it. You know, some translations will say magi. People loosely translation magician or astronomers. But we need to notice here that Luke tells us after Jesus was born, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. You know, they were looking for the King of Jews because they saw his star, right? You know, the wise men were not there at the birth of Jesus. Now, we always see an activity scene, and we always see the three wise men being there. We don't even know if there was actually three. You know, some cultures, you know, think that there's seven. Some think there's 12, signifying the 12 tribes. You know, we get three basically because of the three gifts. It makes it simple. Same for as the artists, they kind of chalk it up to convenience for artists. You know, if you're painting this picture back in the day, it was easier just to, let's just add the wise men there because I don't want to make two pictures. You know, I don't want to make two, you know, take two canvases up because they came to worship Jesus anyways. So somewhere along the line, it just happened. You know, sometimes for convenience sakes, traditions can be like the game of telephone. I don't know if you guys ever played that, where you say something to one person and then you try to say it to the neighbor and then it goes down the line. And it changes. It typically will change a little bit. Details change. Traditions can grow. You know, like I said, we don't know exactly how many people there were, but because of how the journey back then, our travel would have been long and it would have been dangerous, more than likely, even if there was only three wise men, they wouldn't have been alone. You know, especially carrying valuable gifts. They would have had a caravan, there would have been multiple people coming. In all that time it takes to orchestrate that and get people to travel, they just saw the star, they can't just be there in a moment's notice. You know, it takes all this time. Now, they do, in traditions, they do have, actually, these three wise men are named. And I'm not going to butcher these names, but Melchora, he's a Persian scholar, as they figured. Casper, and most of them feel like it's an India scholar. And then Belteshazzar, a Babylonian scholar. In European countries, like Spain, have a tradition where around Christmas time, one of the wise men would come to town and he'd have this big white beard and he'd sit on a chair and children would come up to him and tell him what they want and he'd hand out gifts. I don't know if that sounds familiar to anybody, but you know, they have those traditions going on. Now these names that I've mentioned, you know, they're in old documents, but the documents are maybe like 3rd, 5th century, so like 300, 500 years later, but they're there in different documents, in different libraries. You know, the trouble is that just because it's old doesn't mean it's true. You know, because there are other documents which say, oh, well, they came from this place or that place. You know, they have some Chinese Christians, you know, they actually feel like, oh, one of the wise men came from China. That's their tradition. The thing is that there's a status symbol. And they're like, hello, did you know that the wise man came from my country? Oh, yeah, he came from my town. I knew him. You know, there'd be a... You know, it's kind of like in the Christian community, that'd be a big deal, right? It's like, yeah, I'm related, or I know them. That's why I'm so wise. It'd be so cool to have somebody from our village be one of the wise men. So sometimes we have to do some research on those documents. Now, the Bible backs up because it uses some, you know, non-Christian documents to back it up, but, you know, as far as times and dates, but that's like two witnesses. So if two people are saying the same thing about this same subject and they're not working together, you know, you could start building some trust there. But if it's just one person saying this happened, you're not sure because you don't have somebody else, you know, saying it too. So like I said, the travel back then, it would have been not so easy. It would have been long and it would have been dangerous. It makes sense that these wise men would have came from one place, or at least makes sense to me. Now, did these guys come from different places and then just happenstance come along the trail? And it's like, hey, you're going there too? Let's just try together and then go along the way and travel. Or were the wise men, you know, like Facebook buddies? You had this big old group and they were messaging other people back and forth and let's plan a trip. Don't think that happened, but they could have been talking with each other. You know, they could have been studying at one place. They all happened to be from different places, but they were studying there, you know, kind of a conference of wise men, and then they saw the star at the same time. You know, the thing is, we are talking about things what involve God. And with God, if God's orchestrating something, anything is possible and nothing is impossible. In Luke chapter 1, 36 through 37, I'll go ahead and read it. Now indeed, Elizabeth, your relative, has also conceived a son in her old age. And this is now the sixth month for her who was called barren. For with God, nothing will be impossible. When somebody is called barren, it means that she wasn't able to have kids. She wasn't able to have kids her whole younger age, so she's way past the child bearing ages, yet she was going to be a mom. So Elizabeth, the cousin or aunt of Mary, is going to have this boy, right? Both her and Mary having these supernatural childbirths, right? It's kind of amazing how it just goes. You can just imagine like family reunions being like, oh, they'd have all kinds of stories to tell. It'd be unreal. Now, most scholars, getting back to the wise men, most scholars feel like, you know, how did they know about the Messiah? Why were they looking? Why did they feel like they had to go worship this person, what was just being born? They feel like it's because of the teaching of Daniel. So I don't know if you guys remember Daniel, but some 480 some odd years earlier, Babylon conquers Judea. So when a nation conquers another nation, they usually take the spoils. Meaning that they would take books, they would take trinkets, they definitely take the gold, they take gifts, but this would also include they would take people. They would take people, they would take the slaves, and Daniel was one of these slaves. You know, he's famous for Daniel in the lion's den. He also had friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, they're famous for the fiery furnace. All these men, these four men, were considered to be wise men, or magi, in Babylon. So this gets you to the idea is that they would have known about their traditions In those books they would have taken, books from Moses, the Torah. They would have read about this. The scholars back in Babylon would have read about this. They would have known things. They would have been looking at this. Plus the things that Daniel wrote down. Daniel chapter 9, verses 25. Jesse, can you read that?
Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again and the wall even in troublesome time.
So Daniel gives a timeline. There's a timeline. He's talking about timeline from when Jerusalem was being rebuilt because it was torn down by the Babylonians. He's talking about that being rebuilt to the time when Jesus or the Messiah would be born, right? So these wise men were counting town. They were counting the years. So when it says weeks, it's years, and I don't quite understand that, why they talk like that, but they do, is weeks correlate to years, and it works out to be about 403 years that they were waiting for a sign. So they were very diligent. In Numbers 24:17, Michelle. No, you did awesome. Was this the star they were looking for? Part of the Magi's traits were their astronomers. They studied the sky. So they would have noticed something new. It's kind of crazy to me. You think about that. These guys, could have been from Jewish descent, could have been relatives, they could have been Gentiles. Crazy thing is that the Jewish scholars, they would have known the same prophecies. Why weren't they looking at that same time? Why didn't they see the star? Did they not really read Daniel's writings? Did they not really agree with it? Because Daniel was Jewish, but it would have been from a foreign land. We're not sure. There's a lot of things, but it's so amazing how God threads the needle, that he gets everything connected. We may not understand little things, why this happens or why that happens. But when we could step back after everything already is done and we could step back and look at the full picture, it's a masterpiece. It's just amazing how everything just goes together, and it had to happen that way. God knows how it has to happen, and he plans for it that way. And there's so much more, and I thought I could get it all today, but before I started studying, but in the Bible, there's so much detail if you actually break it down. So I was going to divide it up into two different parts. But I feel like going with the theme as far as talking about the movie is the biggest thing that movie got wrong was the wise men being there at the birth. But people have been getting that wrong for centuries, for literally centuries. And just like our study last week in 1 Timothy chapter 1, 3 through 4. Stephen, can you read that?
As I argued, urged you when I went into
Macedonia,
remain in Ephesus.
Sorry.
That you may charge some that they teach no other doctrine, nor give heed to fables or
Geez. Sometimes there's words.
Which cause
disputions. So, those fables, traditions, you could translate it, genealogy as far as where we come from. We can run into problems when we get so focused on traditions that we take it to the, oh no, this has to be this way. Or we get so focused on being strict that it's like, no, it didn't happen exactly like that. You know, Joseph was on the right, not the left, and we get so strict on things that, you know, there's right or wrong. Now, if it's about the gospel truth, you know, if it is about Jesus was just a good teacher, just a good person, yeah, we need to be strict on those things. But if we're just talking strictness on little details, you know, we lose focus on the important thing. We lose focus on Jesus. If our faith hangs on the balance of whether the wise men fast traveled to Bethlehem or not, then our faith isn't that strong because we're putting our faith in something that's not the important thing. We need to have our faith in what the story is truly about. You know, this Christmas, we need to focus on Jesus. Focus on the fact that he was born supernaturally and fulfilled an unimaginable amount of prophecies. And the reason he did that, because God has grace. He has grace and wants us to be saved. John 3:16, 19. Sandro, you want to read that?
The world, like he is, as if his only begotten son. This is John 3:16, right?
Yeah.
He who believes in him should not perish, but have eternal everlasting life. For God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved.
You focus on the fact that God has grace on us. God loves us. He always reaches out. He's always the first one who says, you know, I love you and I will do anything for you to get saved. You know, Jesus didn't come to condemn us, but to save us. That should be our focus. That's the whole purpose, the whole reason for the story. So, Michelle, can you close us in prayer?